Welcome to Pediatric Dentistry from A to T, the podcast that covers all aspects of pediatric dentistry, clinical, business, wellness for dentists, and leading-edge science. It's all right here. And now your host, Dr. Jared Johnson.
Hi, Dr. Jared here. It is great to be back. I've been gone for a little bit, not because I don't love doing this. It's just been I haven't had the time to do this. So what inspired me today was there's some talk on Dentaltown, and I know many of you know that I post on Dentaltown quite a bit. I log on, check out things that are going on just to stay current and be up to date with my colleagues. But there's this post about an SDF failure. And I remember coming out of residency, and SDF was just coming out, and I thought I had over $400,000 worth of debt at that time. And I thought, how the heck am I going to pay this back when cavities are going to be gone? And I know SDF can be useful. It can be useful if used in the right way. I think there's also a lot of misconceptions about silver diamine fluoride out there and proper ways to use it. And I just want to have an open conversation today because it is a tool. It's not the answer for everything, and that's okay. We have lots of tools we use, but if you need to put a screw into a board, you're not going to use a hammer. And the same thing goes for the tools we have in dentistry with sedation and SDF and Hall crowns and conventional treatment. It all blends together, and we can't box ourselves into a corner and just use one tool, because it's not always going to work for every situation, and it may not meet up with where the parents are at with their desires for their kid. And I've gotten a lot more lenient on compromising what I would ideally do for my kid with patients that we have, just because I want to meet the parents where they are in their journey with their dental care. And as long as it's not something crazy, like the other day we had a parent that the kid had a cellulitis on tooth, I think it was tooth B, and they wanted me to save it. And I just said, I don't think that's the best thing. You've got 6 year molars in behind it. We're not going to have a ton of space loss, maybe just under a millimeter. There's no point in saving that tooth. I can do a root canal on it, but I just don't feel comfortable doing that. And that's maybe one situation where you stand a little bit stronger and try to work through that as a conversation before you just put your hands up and say no. But meeting the patients where they are in their journey is actually really important, and you'll be a lot happier when you start having these conversations. They may be difficult at first, but when you understand where the parents are coming from, sometimes you can address some of their concerns in that moment and get to a place where you both can agree on something. Back to SDF. We know that SDF is desirable compared to sedation and anesthesia for some parents. We have lots of parents that come in that are from another country, and unfortunately, they may have had an issue with an anesthetic in the other country. And I mean, that's pretty common when we see some of these first generation migrants that I have at my office, and they really want to avoid it if they can. And you can't always, but if we can, that may be something that you want to try to utilize SDF to buy some time and work with the kid. Protocols to do that, you got to definitely see these kids a little more frequently, keep an eye on things, and consider changing the plan if things keep progressing. So it's going to take a lot of buy-in, but it is desirable for a lot of parents. And we even have blog posts on my website about SDF to kind of garner that interest as well. As far as arresting decay, we know it can work well at doing decay arresting. So we know it's anywhere from 47 to 90% after one application, and then subsequent applications do increase your success. So consider getting this on at least twice quickly, and then every 3 to 6 months after that to keep on these teeth. We also know that reapplication may be necessary. I've had kids where we apply it to the tooth and it just doesn't pick up everywhere where we'd like it to, and we have to reapply it. And that's pretty common to see. I would recommend that you do the subsequent applications and consider also glass ionomer if you need to. Studies show it's more effective than fluoride varnish every 3 months. We have a lot of kids that just go on a 3-month recall protocol at our office where We do that, but we also can consider adjuncts such as SDF and a smart technique or a holocron. And it works really, really well when you're keeping an eye on things and using it properly. One of the biggest things that's really important to understand is that addressing other dietary factors is really important. There is no amount of medicine that you can just paint on teeth if the habits at home are going to change. And I think if you think back to diet, I think that's the number one thing parents don't understand. They don't understand the crackers, the chips, the gummy vitamins. If you haven't taken a look at the work by Roger Lucas, they don't teach you in dental school that these dried starches cause cavities. And that's like the number one snack food that all these well-meaning families are having when they come in and their kid has 6 to 8 posterior primary teeth with decay. They're like, we don't have sugar. And I was like, well, what else do you have? Do you like crackers, chips, goldfish, gummy, second thing? And they're like, oh, and you have that conversation and you can really help them. But needing to address those other factors is really important to do at that time. And I think there's a lot of places where you can use SDF and be effective with it. But I think these other factors play a huge role. And I want to highlight this study from the Journal of Dentistry, randomized clinical trial on the effectiveness of silver diamine fluoride and glass ionomer in arresting dentin caries in preschool children. And this is the big takeaway from this study. It was found that lesions in the anterior teeth and buccal and lingual surfaces had a higher chance to become arrested. And this is probably because these teeth are surfaces easier to be cleaned. So you're 15.6 times more likely to arrest a buccal or lingual surface versus an occlusal or interproximal surface. And you're 5.5 times more likely to arrest an anterior tooth versus a posterior tooth. So think about it. Occlusal surfaces, you're getting food stuck in the grooves. Interproximal, you're getting food stuck interproximally. And if these kids are eating this junk food, which we just talked about, the sticky stuff, the sticky starches, the sticky candies, and that's not getting cleaned out, I think that's why we're seeing this arrest rate so different. So I would highly, highly encourage you, if you've got a lesion that you can place a glass ionomer in, I would highly recommend that in these young kids, even if they're uncooperative or cooperative, I would highly recommend after you do your 2 to 3 applications, I usually do 2 applications and then put the GI in, get the GI in there. We've had kids that have these 6-year molars are anxious and they have cavities, and we'll do SDF twice and put a GI in. And I've had some of them go 3-4 years before we even had to restore the tooth because that lasted so well. And at that point, we got the kid to be more cooperative and they're more comfortable and we didn't have to sedate them. So please keep that in mind when you're using this. And I strongly lean more towards if they are broken down to the point where you're at that on a primary tooth and the posterior, I'm more likely to go with a holocron because I know that's a slam dunk. I mean, these smaller ones where they're not broken down enough for a GI, maybe you can do the SDF and work with the behavior for a little bit. But that's something to consider also. If the parents are willing to accept the dark black, maybe the holocron's more definitive and, you know, it's probably going to be a better choice from a long-term standpoint than trying to mess around with the SDF if it's to that point. We use SDF a lot for palliative care. You may have patients that come in with multiple lesions that you can't treat. We use it to help delay sedation and anesthesia if we can. I mean, I don't really get too excited about taking a 1 or 2-year-old into the OR, especially trying to delay that till they're 3, 4, great way to do it. It's really nice to be able to use this on these kind of kids that maybe you have a kid that went to the OR and now they got 6-year molars and they still haven't come around and you've got that tooth with the cavity that we talked about earlier. That's a great way to do the smart technique on that occlusal or on that hypoplastic tooth that's difficult to get numb, buy you some time, get them more comfortable before you have to work on their tooth. Also, keep in mind that you have to treat each patient as an individual. There are some people that don't have access to care, and that can be something that this can be done in the streets. You see Jeremy Horst and them out there doing this for the homeless, and I think that's a great service for that population. It may not be something that you or I need because we have the means to get in, but that's the situation that we should also consider, is where people are in their financial journey as well. Medical history is important to consider as well. You don't really probably, I've had a few patients that are GPs that they were messing around with this, and it gets to the point where it's now like, now we need sedation. And if we would have just seen them sooner, maybe I could have done something like a Hall crown or something alternative to that. And now we're dealing with an infection, and we've got some serious medical needs that we have to address as well. So sometimes it's not best to mess around with some of this stuff with some of these patients that just are a little more compromised. And if things get to the point where we need to consider advanced behavior management, or we have to do something, kind of puts us in a little bit of a pinch as a pediatric practitioner. You may want to consider doing this on those kids that are a little wiggly, especially for smaller things. It can buy you some time, help arrest some of the decay for you, and get that child to the point where they are cooperative for you to get things done. Risk of sedation versus urgency of treatment is important to consider as well. I know this. I think in dental school, we're taught you got to get everything done at once. Get all the disease control. We got to get the urgency, emergent and urgent things done. Then we move into disease control and then back into rehabilitation. But with kids, these teeth are going to fall out. They're not going to last forever. So how do we manage the kid's journey where they are with their behavior and also manage where they are with their caries? I mean, if it's a small class two, is that going to get worse in 3 months? Probably not, to the point where it changes from a filling into a phlebotomy. If it's larger, maybe then we look at something more urgent. And those are things we have to consider. And it takes a while to learn that as a provider and a practitioner. And it's really important to learn that for your patients, to try to work with them and get to the point. There may be a kid that you have on a 3-month recall and things go bad quickly and you have to then change your mind, and that's okay. I think it's important to consider all these factors when you're coming up with this plan. Parental desires can also be something you have to look at as well. Like we talked about earlier with sedation and anesthesia, not everyone has the money. Not everyone wants to take the risk. And I think it's very safe to do, but I mean, it can be expensive too. And if they can avoid that, that may be something that they want to do. And if we just put our nose up and say, we're not going to try this, or we're not going to do this, I think it can put these families in a situation where they may leave your office and go somewhere else. And again, I don't think this is, if these things are larger and closer to the pulp, I don't think this is something we want to mess around with. Like, we got to kind of have both ends. Sometimes it might be better. They want to avoid the sedation to get through the one extraction and then deal with the other stuff with Hall crowns down the road. But we shouldn't be trying to do things it can't do. Like, if we know it's not going to work, we probably shouldn't do that if it's to that point where it needs more advanced treatment. And we should try to educate our families on that and talk about the alternatives for them as well. Again, for my high-risk protocol, we'll do the first application at their visit. We'll bring them back in 2 to 4 weeks and give them a second application, consider that SMART technique, and then put them on a 3-month recall so I can reevaluate this so I don't have something blow up and become a big problem. We'll reapply the STF as necessary. We'll do Hall crowns as necessary. And we'll do sedation and change our plan if necessary. I am open to that. And as long as parents are on this journey and they understand to buy in, this can be a great way to work with your families. If they're not willing to come in that frequently and have the additional eye on things and additional visits, additional desensitization visits where the kid gets an easy visit, then maybe it's worth just jumping into the sedation at that point. And like I said, everyone's going to have to be treated differently. And to be successful, I think it's important that you make a good diagnosis, know which lesions are appropriate to use the STF on, and highly consider using that SMART technique with the glass ionomer after that. And I think you can be really successful. I mean, I've got cases of an anesthesiologist child that she didn't want to put the kid to sleep, and we utilized SDF and some hall crowns and got through things to the point where we were able to do conventional restoration. And it was a journey, but we did it together, and they bought in, and that's what they wanted. So I think we need to, again, consider both sides of the aisle. I don't think there's a never use SDF or always use SDF. There's definitely can be use for overuse, and there definitely can be underuse. And I think really important to kind of take a step back, look at how you're using it at your office, how you can dial this in to be an aid for your patients when necessary, and then also understand when it can't work. And that's just my thoughts. I think too often we don't listen to the other side. We get our boots dug into the ground and we're not willing to budge or compromise. And I think that doesn't do good for our patients or our profession. And I can't tell you how many things I'm doing now that I didn't learn in dental school. I'm sure you can think of a lot of things. I mean, just off the top of my head, I mean, the silver diamine fluoride wasn't really around. We had house solution, but we weren't taught that. That was back in the 50s and kind of forgotten and came back here. We're doing MTA bioceramic pulpotomies, irreversible pulpitis and permanent teeth now treated with a vital pulp therapy and a bioceramic pulpotomy. We're 3D printing composite ceramic hybrid crowns now. Things have changed. And if we're not willing to change, we're going to get left behind. And I think it's exciting to learn all this stuff, but we got to stay up to date. And I know that you're listening to this, so you probably have an interest in that. And I just want to support you in that and invite you again. If you want, we have a free webinar coming up on sealants with Garrison Dental and SDI coming, I think, on June 13th. That's free. If you want to come to that, we'd love to have you. And if you want to attend one of our courses, we'd love to have you in Denver. I know it's probably a little late for Orlando, but I'd love to hopefully see some of you at the APD after that. And just invite you to come and learn practical pediatric dentistry. And it's just been a journey for me, and I'm excited. I would love to share that with you. So I hope you all have enjoyed this and just kind of my thoughts, but keep an open mind. And be positive and treat others with respect and be willing to learn from them. Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to Pediatric Dentistry from A to T. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Dr. Johnson, visit us online at www.pediatricdentalce.com. For more tips and tricks, follow Pediatric Dental Seminars on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.